we had left off in Revelation 11, and particularly with verse 7, and that had led us to consider some other points in other chapters. But let's reread Revelation 11, 7, just to refresh our memories on what we're talking about here. Brother Mark Candle, could you do that, please?
Revelation 11, verse 7. And how far did you want to read that?
Just the one.
Just the one verse. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them.
Okay, very good. Very simple, very straightforward. But you may remember that we took a look at several other chapters in the Revelation, because this is the first time that the beast is mentioned in Revelation. And so we wanted to get a background on this. This verse is one of the points of controversy, as it were, on several different main views, if you will, that the brethren hold. This verse plays an important role into that. And we want to say that it's both are reasonable, and each one of us will have to make up our own minds, but you don't even have to make up your mind at this time. The Revelation study is to expose and familiarize us with it of itself. So if you listen to both views or more than both views and you want to continue just to think on it, don't feel that that's in any way, shape, or form any kind of a failure or anything like that, because sometimes views take years to fully settle in one's mind, especially if there's several reasonable possibilities. So I certainly don't want to I just want everyone to feel comfortable with that aspect and comfortable with disagreeing with the variety of views. Okay, so with that then being said, last week we looked at chapter 13. And in chapter 13, in verse 1, we learned about a beast that had 7 heads and 10 horns. And the dragon gave his seat unto that beast. And when we read there, and we're very familiar with it, and fortunately, Brother Russell also elaborates on it. We, in the fourth volume, 1912 forward, that's the long 16-page forward, we all know that that represents the papacy and how it was developed out of pagan Rome, and it became papal Rome. And that's really the subject of our second hour considerations today, the discourse on Revelation 12, which precedes Revelation 13. So you can see the logic there. We also read that there was a two-horned beast in chapter 13, which was the Church of England and Ireland, and particularly predominant as the Church of England, which King Henry VIII started in the 1500s, 1530-something, and because he wanted the divorce. And so we have a two-horned beast. So then, and I want to make note, you notice it had one head. Two horns, one head. It didn't talk about multiple heads on that Church of England. And then we read in the 13th chapter, there's an image of the beast. So it's not really a beast. It's an image of one. And as they say, it wanted to be a beast, but it was not in its inception. So what we find in the 13th chapter, when we are formally introduced to the seven-headed, ten-horned beast, that's papacy, and it's identified with the Roman Empire. And that's what seven heads and ten horns mean to us. It identifies the Roman Empire. And the seven heads are showing the seven successive forms of government over the Roman Empire. And that the 10 horns would show the 10 distinct powers within the empire. So, for example, it wasn't historically always like this, but it had the example that there was a Holy Roman Empire and it had an emperor. At the time of the Reformation, Charles V happened to be crowned by the Pope as the Roman Empire emperor. But within the empire, there were divisions, country divisions, and those country divisions had their leaders, kings or princes or such. Those would be the horns that were under the control, more or less, of that head, that form of government that at the time of the Reformation was a Holy Roman Empire. It was a church and state combination. They were cooperating. It was a adulterous relationship between the papacy, whose religious aspect is depicted by a harlot, a woman, but as a civil aspect, the Pope is also a ruler and has a territory. It had the Vatican states, as they call them, but it still to this day has the Vatican City. They have their own ambassadors. They're called, anyone who remembers, go ahead, speak out. They are called, not nuances, nuncios.
Nuncios,
thank you, it's Italian, nuncios. So they have their own ambassadors, which represent the religious aspect. Okay, good. In fact, the United States has an embassy with the Vatican that was opened under Ronald Reagan. You don't open an embassy with a strictly religious organization. You open an embassy with another country's. So it shows the civil aspect and the religious aspect of Rome, papacy, which makes it a beast. That makes it a beast. The Church of England, it too is a beast. It had one head. That's the king or queen of England. That's the civil aspect, but they're also considered the head of the church. And even though they do have another head of the church, as it were, who leads over it, but officially, and when it began, Henry VIII was the recognized head of the church as well, which it made it a beast, one-headed, two-horned beast. The image of the beast was the Evangelical Alliance of 1846. It is a religious organization, but without any civil power. So it's only an image of what a beast could be. It looks forward to a time where it will be vitalized and have more powers. That's not today's study. So, the concept that I personally like, and it's not a sales job, the saying that I personally like is that I like keeping the beast, that term beast, consistent in the Revelation to represent a religious government, a religion and a government cooperative. And I know that we could find different expressions even in the Harvest Message that might present it differently depending on which verse you're looking at. And that's there, and everyone has to consider that too. But I personally like the view to keep in the Revelation consistent that the beast is a religious government, that the dragon is a civil government is the emphasis when it mentions the dragon. And when you think of a beast, scripturally, in Revelation, and actually even in Daniel, when it talks about the beast, it has a body, even though it doesn't always say the body, but it says the head. It has 7 heads and 10 horns, or the two-horned beast has one head and two horns. Now, to have a head, it has to sit on a body. We recognize that. So, but those are the antitheses that we have of the papacy and the two-horned beast. So the horns, to my understanding, on an animal, are on the head. The horns or powers are on the head. You think of a cow, its horns are on its head. Now, more on that in a second, but the emphasis that I'm trying to bring out is that the seven heads, the head is where the brain is, and that's what controls the animal or a beast. It's in the horns on the head, the horns or powers under the control of that head or that government are directed by that government. So to some of the brethren, fine brethren, they do not have the horns on the heads. They put the horns, the ten horns, on the back of the beast. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason. It's because they think that there is an eighth form of government that's not a head. So they cannot have the horns on the head if it's a headless beast. So they put the horns on the back of the beast. Now, to my mind, we've argued that a headless beast is a decapitated beast. It's a dead beast. If it has no head, you've got horns on its back, it doesn't make sense. To my mind, it doesn't make sense in my mind scripturally, but you will find, I think, at least one reprint where it's presented that the eighth form of government of the beast is headless without a head. And I want to bring out that they feel that it's headless in the sense that it doesn't have a leader. It is a republic. Or it is a government of the people. So there's no head. But I would contend if it's a republic, that's still a form of government. It's still a head that's guiding the beast body and the beast horns. So I don't like the thought of a headless beast. I don't find it particularly scriptural. But as we move through the presentations here in these verses, there are some brethren who feel this beast in Revelation 11:7 is a headless beast. They feel it is a republic without any head. And they will then make a connection in Revelation 17 in that regard, which we're going to consider. Our personal view is we like the thought that in Revelation 11 verse 7, this beast, we like the thought is that it's the papacy. It does have a head. It's a church state head. And it is part of the Holy Roman Empire period or form of government. You end up with these two views. We're going to talk more about that. And we'll allow for more comments and questions on that. But that's why I'm bringing out what I'm bringing out, because these are two of the thoughts. As I was reflecting this morning on how to demonstrate this a little bit, and I was thinking how in the book of Daniel, in the, I'm not going to get it there. In Daniel, the eighth chapter, and I think we'll take a look there briefly just for a little background. Daniel, the eighth chapter. And let's see here. Let's see. Ruth, could you read there for us verse... let's see, verse 3 through 8, please.
Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beasts might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground, and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. For it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven.
And Ruth, did you then read 20 and 22? That's the interpretation.
The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kings shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power.
So, Ruth, when you put these things together, what do we learn about these? These are beasts. They're animals. They're descriptive, but they're beast animals, and they have heads and horns. And what do we take away? Or some of the thoughts we could take away.
Well, there's a description of this battle between the ram, which is Medo-Persia, and I believe it's Greece. Is it Greece?
Yep.
And Alexander the Great. Mm-hmm. And they had this battle, and it was their heads that were pushing against each other where the horns were. And so then the horn was broken by this. The two horns were broken. Of Medo-Persia were broken by this battle. And verse 8, when Alexander the Great died, his horn, he was the great horn on the head, and it was broken, and then his generals came up, the four generals came up. And so the horns were on the heads in this battle. I figure that's probably the point. Over.
Okay, good. Well, that's good. Other comments on these verses here in Daniel. So let's consider just a little bit more, Ruth. Everything was right on. The Medo-Persia, excuse me, the Medo-Persia was an empire, and it had two leading nations, Media and Persia, and they cooperated. At first, Media was the stronger. But Persia became more powerful and ended up absorbing Media. So as was prophetically portrayed, the larger horn came up higher later. That's the Persia part. But what we're seeing is it's one animal. It's a ram. The horns are on the head. That's the leading form of government there. And they had two horns, two powers. And one became more powerful later. That was the Persia part. The animal or the empire that it battled with was Greece, depicted by this goat. Where was its horn? It was between its eyes, again, on the head. And when it was broken, four horns came up in its place, showing that the empire of Greece became subdivided into four different powers, divided amongst Alexander's four generals. Now, we've all studied this. Brother Russell outlines it right in the volume study. But I think it's worthwhile to note that we learn from these scriptures how we can best interpret our understanding of the beast and the beastly arrangements and the heads and the horns and how they're represented. So I'm going to go back to the Revelation unless there's more comments here in Daniel. Okay. So when we go back to the Revelation, in our verse, in chapter 11, verse 7, it tells us that when they have finished their testimony, that's the two witnesses, the Old and New Testament, clothed in sackcloth, that the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome and kill them. This phrase, the beast that comes out of the bottomless pit, there are two leading views. One is that it comes out of the bottomless pit at the time that it's going to make war against the Old and New Testament. The other view is that this is just an identifier of this beast, but it's referring to a future event that is going to come out of the bottomless pit in the future. It only comes out of the bottomless pit once in the future. The other view has this beast as the Republican form of government comes out of the abyss twice. So let's take a look where this phrase is in Revelation, the 17th chapter. Revelation 17. Last week, we read Revelation 17, verses 1 through 10. And we discussed that. Our phrase is in verse 8. Revelation 17:8. The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into destruction, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. So the view that holds that the beast always, this beast is the papacy. It's a church state, government. That view holds that back in Revelation 11, that was the papacy making war on the Bible, during the Reformation. And it is a reference that the papacy goes out, the papacy as a church state government goes into the abyss when another form of government takes over the Roman Empire, but that it's going to come out of the abyss as a church state government in the future. There's that view. The other view is that the beast that comes out of the bottomless pit comes out of the bottomless pit in Revelation 11 to make war against the Bible is the French Revolution. And the French Revolution, particularly the form of Republican form of government during that 10-year period made war against the Old and New Testament, the Bible. And then it went into the abyss, superseded by another form of government over the Roman Empire, but it's going to reascend out of the bottomless pit in the future. That view holds that this specific beast is headless because it has a Republican form of government, so it's considered to be headless. So part of what you and I would think of how to interpret the 11th chapter, those few verses where this appears, is partially predicated on how we interpret the 17th chapter and what we think the 17th chapter is trying to tell us. And whether or not you're comfortable with having a headless beast and the horns of the beast on the back, because there's no head, it's decapitated. But yet it's still alive, and it's still a form of government, but it's not a head. So one of the elements of that discussion comes into play when we read that the in Revelation 17, we read in verse 1 that the harlot or the whore sat upon many waters. And the emphasis in the 17th chapter is it shows the papacy sometimes as a religious element. That's what's predominant, the religious element, when papacy is not controlling the Roman Empire. It's still a religion, and it still has its little control over its little country, but the Vatican, but it doesn't have control over the empire. So the people, the waters support papacy as a religion. But we also see in verse 2 that the kings of the earth, they've committed fornication with her. They have a illicit relationship with her at different times in the gospel age history. Sometimes you have a church state relationship with the kings of the earth, like the Holy Roman Empire, and other times you do not, like during Napoleon, when he had set it aside, for example. And in verse 3, we see that this woman sits upon a scarlet-colored beast, having 7 heads and 10 horns. So this is showing when the papacy, this harlot, the religious element, is controlling the beast, which would imply that there was a time when the Holy Roman Empire was controlled by the papacy. She's riding the beast. When you get down to verse 9, sorry for jumping around, but get down to verse 9. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. So it's a way in which the Revelation is doing a little summary of the previous verses. When you say, and here is the mind that hath wisdom. It's like a summary of what you have just previously seen. The 7 heads are 7 mountains. Now, you and I know that mountains represent kingdoms. Okay, Brother Michael?
It's actually a question. Don't want to distract you from your train of thought, but in terms of the beast, first it goes into the abyss. We know that before it goes into the abyss, he was having war with the two witnesses. Then it comes out from the beast, as you're trying to bring out from Revelation 17. My question is why? It says it goes to eternal destruction, but what exactly does that indicate or denote?
So thank you, Brother Mike. I don't mind brother raising their hands while I'm going along here. In chapter 17, verse 8, it says the beast that thou sawest was and is not. That is, it had been previously, and then for a time it wasn't. And it says, and it shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, which means it's going to reappear again. And when it does that, it's going to end up being destroyed. going to go into destruction, which demonstrates that it's not going to be put back in a bottomless pit to ever reappear again. It's going to be destroyed. So let us do another example here. We know in Revelation 20 that Satan is cast into a bottomless pit and sealed over during the 1,000 years. And at the end of the 1,000 years, Satan is loosed out of that bottomless pit to go out and to try to deceive all those that dwell on the earth. But then what happens to Satan after the little season? Is he put back in a bottomless pit? No, he's destroyed. That means he's never going to reappear again. So here, similarly, this beast that we're talking about it had an existence. It went into a bottomless pit. It's suppressed, and it will come out of the bottomless pit. And when it does, it's going to end up being destroyed. Now, of course, it's going to do something before that. If it wasn't going to do something before being destroyed, then why put it in the bottomless pit? Just destroy it back before you put it in the pit. But because it was put in a pit, it implies that God has a purpose for it still yet to happen. But then it's going to be destroyed. So, if your view is that this beast in Revelation 11 and here in this verse, this beast that went into the bottomless pit, if your view is that it's the papacy as a church state government controlling the empire, it means that it had happened earlier. And so I'm saying, like back at our Reformation, the papacy as a church state, the Holy Roman Empire, was in having a controlling influence, and it was persecuting the Bible. But then, later, the papacy as a church state government over the empire was dethroned by Napoleon and was kept dethroned by Victor Emmanuel, and was still dethroned during the Nazis. But in the future, the papacy will reemerge as a head. For a brief period of time, you'll have church state government like it had been before, but at the end of that period, it's going to be destroyed forever. There'll be no more papacy. If your view is that this beast in chapter 11 is the revolutionary government of France during the French Revolution, it came into existence. It warred against the Bible. Then it was displaced by Napoleon and so on. And it's been out of existence, but will reemerge out of the bottomless pit in the future. And it too will have a period of time as a revolutionary people's form of government, but then it too will be destroyed and it won't appear anymore. So you have these two views, two prominent views. Either it's how the papacy has come along or how the revolutionary form of people's government has come along. Sister Debbie.
Just to note that the French Revolution always had a leader. It started out with George Jacques Danton. And when he was displaced, Jean-Paul Marat took over. And the final one was Maximilian Robespierre. So the French Revolution always had a leader. Over.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Yes. So we appreciate that. Okay. We're all putting together this information. And we're all getting it. We're still gathering these different aspects for our thinking. Sister Debbie.
I just wanted to say that because that means it had a head. So the French Revolution had a head, if you wanted to figure that as maybe a beast. You know, it still had a head over.
Well, that's a perspective. I agree. That's a perspective. And we're going to delve more into that, but you know, that seems it fit to me. I never really was taken with the idea of a headless beast, even though I know you'll find it in some of, at least one or two places in Brother Russell's writing on these particular verses. So, we'll continue to consider this. So I'm going to go back to Revelation 17 verse 9 again. And the summation of the verses and this, and here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains, seven forms of government. That's what a mountain is. It's a form of a kingdom or a government on which the woman sitteth. Now that's an important point to my thinking. The woman, the papacy, sat on the empire, the Roman Empire of these seven heads at some period of time. Now, I want to emphasize what that means to me. What that means to me is that we're viewing the Roman Empire during the time period of the Gospel Age, and particularly the time period in which the papacy in some form was in existence. The woman as a religion was in some form in existence. So I don't hold the view that we look at the Roman Empire going way back into pre-Christian time. Some brethren have that view, that I don't particularly hold that view. Because the woman sits on these seven mountains at some angle or some perspective, I would view that this is a gospel age picture, which is also in keeping with the book of Revelation, which is primarily a history of the gospel age until you get to the conclusion where, of course, you're in the peaceable kingdom at the concluding chapters. But the seven stages of the church. Let's take a breather for a second. Think on this. The true church has how many heads? Only one, Jesus, of course. Look how many heads this beast has, or the dragon has. It's got seven heads. It's showing that there are ever-changing governments during the Gospel Age over the Roman Empire. And isn't that just like Satan? Always changing these heads to meet the to try to meet the demands of the situation. But with the true church, the seven stages of the church, there were seven periods of development of the church. However, it's always only had one head. That's a major distinction. But to verse, Sister Debbie.
So you don't think that the seven mountains are like literal hills that like Rome sits on, and Jerusalem has seven hills too? Because I heard that the seven hills, as it were the seven, you know, distinguished literally Rome itself. And that's where the woman ruled from, papacy ruled from. But I guess if we're doing total symbolicity, or, you know, these seven heads during the seven stages of the church, what would they be? It couldn't be the popes because they kept changing up. There's way more than seven. Then are you going to touch on those, what those seven leaders would be? Over.
I'm not going to do that now. There are seven forms of government, and the papacy was not always in control of the government. But as a religious element, she was in existence at some relationship during this gospel age period. But it is true that the seven hills of Rome became an identifier that the Reformation leaders would use to identify the papacy as being the harlot. because there were seven literal hills. But here, obviously, they're meant to be understood symbolically. But it's a nice identifier that it literally also takes place. Ruth, you were going to say that. Sorry.
I was going to say that the Lord given us an unmistakable clue that it's the Roman Empire so that we don't miss it. He doesn't want us to miss it. This is the Roman Empire he's talking about. Over.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Sister Debbie.
I'm a little confused now because I thought that the woman sat on this beast. And I thought you said that that meant she was in control of these heads. So if she's not in control of the seven forms of government, that couldn't fit.
That doesn't fit. It means that what I should have said better was that it means that the woman was in existence during the time of seven forms of government. And some of the forms of government, she is actually the leading, guiding light. But seven heads and ten horns become an identifier of the Roman Empire. The dragon had seven heads and ten horns. But the woman was in existence. In other words, either the papacy or the mystery of iniquity that was already at work in the days that Paul wrote was in existence. So it's limiting our viewpoint to the gospel age history of the Roman Empire. Brother Chris.
The whole picture, the woman sitteth upon many waters. Well, how can you control many waters? She's sitting there and the waters are flowing freely and doing their thing. But when she sits upon a beast, well, the picture is painted that this beast has a head, that it is, and she's got the reins. She's guiding the government that is controlling the beast. Now, I just, for clarification, you're saying it, but you're not saying it. When you said that, looking at the revolutionary form of government or a republic, in my mind, when she's sitting upon many waters, we look at verse 15 and the Bible interprets that for us unmistakably, that is peoples, nations, and tongues. When she sits upon the beast, well, in my mind, that is that picture of that of the body, the body that the head controls is still the people. They're just shown in a different picture. They're controlled. At some point, this republic won't have a head, and as a like an empire, but that's what spirals into anarchy. So can you put that together for us? Is that saying the same thing you are, or is it a little bit off? Over.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the comments. It's let me keep going through the verses, and let's just see if it becomes a little more clear. In verse 10, Revelation 17:10. And there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. So let's digest this for a moment. The point is that the view of the John class in this setting is during the sixth head. This verse shows the heads are meant to be understood as sequential. They all aren't in existence at the same time. You have seven distinct heads. So, one at a time. Five forms of government, five kings, five mountains, five forms of government are in the past at this viewpoint. You're looking at the beast during the sixth head. It tells us that there is it tells us that five are fallen, one is, the other is not yet come. That's our seventh. And when he comes, he must continue a short space or short period of time. Don't give up yet. Verse 11. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into destruction. So let's digest this to this point. We've been looking at a beast with seven heads, and we're saying now that they're successive. Five forms of government are in the past. The sixth one is our vantage point. We're looking at a seventh that's going to come for a short time, and then after that, there is going to be an eighth. And that eighth one is this beast that was in the bottomless pit. So, some of the brethren interpret, if you have it as a revolutionary form of government, you say that this eighth is not a head, because the verse doesn't say it's the eighth head. It says it's the eighth and is of the seven. So they say this is a headless beast. But if you're of the viewpoint that this is the papacy, as a church state government, then this eighth is an eighth head. It's a church state government, and it's of the seven in the fact that it's now saying this is going to be a repeat of a previous form of government. The eighth is of the seven. And so that then becomes part of a distinction, because if you have the eighth as no head, but it's like the eighth beast, it's somehow of the seven, but it wasn't a head. So it couldn't be one of the seven heads. So in my mind, that becomes a conflict. And yet, to other brethren's mind, they work through that, and they feel that eighth is this headless beast. Now, to our thinking, what we were looking at was that the viewpoint could possibly be that the sixth head had been Napoleon. That the seventh was, I said that wrong. I'm sorry. That was a previous. Sorry. The fifth was Napoleon. The sixth was Victor Emmanuel, because that was the time period of Brother Russell, and he was the messenger that enlightened us on this chapter. Sorry. So that the sixth was Victor Emmanuel. The seventh would have been Mussolini and Hitler as the Nazi Axis powers, and they lasted a short time. So we've been kind of in a state of limbo, which is kind of odd, yes, but we're looking for this future repeat of a church-state union in which papacy has a leading role. The other view is that they're looking forward to a Republican people's form of government with no head that is going to control the beast. Brother Adi and then Sister Day.
So in the NIV and verse 11 says the beast who once was and now is not is an eighth king. Is the word king actually in the original text, or is it just implied?
You're asking a good question. I have to say, I'm not sure. I haven't looked into that recently. We can. Go ahead.
Because that would indicate it would be a head and not just a body. Because the king is a head.
Yeah, that's true. Anyone has anything more on that? And which translation was that, Brother Adi?
I believe it's the NIV. Yeah.
NIV. Okay. I was just looking at the diaglot. I'm racing Sister Cheryl. okay. Doesn't have it, as doesn't mention king there that I see. Other comments on this aspect? Okay. We'll consider that, Brother Adi. Well, Sister Debbie.
See, now I'm really confused. I thought the seven kings were forms of government, but because you have the beast that was and is not, I thought that was papacy that got shot in the head and then came back to life. So that papacy would be the beast that comes again, you know, is raised again into power, which it isn't now. So what exactly are these seven kings? Is it forms of government? Is it actual people that are in power instead of papacy? Or I'm kind of confused about it now, because then you intimated that these were religious governments, church-state unions. So I'm kind of confused. Over.
It's not individual people, because no seven people could live all that length of the gospel age. So it's not people. We believe it's forms of government. And I think we demonstrated that from Daniel, the 8th chapter, that these animals, beasts with their heads and their horns were forms of government. But that's okay. That's what we're still emphasizing. I don't think we said anything different on that. Sister Debbie.
Well, you said that the 5th was Napoleon, the 6th was Victor Emmanuel, and the 7th was like Nazi, you know, Hitlerish. And to me, that's people. That's not forms of government. Oh.
I said, well, that's Nazism. I did mention Mussolini and Hitler. That's true. They were leaders of the fascist Nazi axis. That's true, but it's that form of government. Victor Emmanuel, the first, united Italy by confiscated the Vatican States from Italy, from the papacy. They excommunicated Victor Emmanuel I for doing that. But he is what made modern day Italy that we know it today. Now, he is an individual, but that was its form of government. But when I said that, now Napoleon, he too was an individual, but he formed a form of government. And he had a role over the empire over the Roman Empire. And then the papacy is certainly not just one pope, but the papacy is a form of government when it's in control of the Holy Roman Empire period, which for centuries and centuries. We talk about the 1,000-year counterfeit rule of papacy, for example. And that, I mean, even the Nazis, you remember what was another name for the, what were the Nazis? What were they trying to establish? This is very famous.
The Third Reich?
Fourth Reich. Third Reich. Yes. And what did that mean, Brother Chris?
The third 1,000-year reign?
Right. That's right. So, you know, that's part of these concepts that we're trying to demonstrate here. However, just trying to stay focused on this particular aspect of what we can use in the 11th chapter, without trying to do a verse by verse completely in 17, even though I know, you know, I brought us here on purpose, still trying to limit it. And, Brother Adi?
Yeah, I was just thinking that the NIV uses the word king, even though it isn't there, because it says, he is both an eighth and is of the seven. And in verse 10, it says, and the kings are seven. So maybe that's why the NIV implies that the eighth is the king also. I'm just a thought.
Okay, and here's where, in my mind, what that verse is saying, why it doesn't say it more plainly, is that the eighth, it's telling us that it's the eighth is of the seven to demonstrate a repeat of one of the previous heads. It's of the seven. It's like saying it's one of the seven. So we're going to have a repeat form of government. And we think that's church and state with papacy. That's a repeat. The eighth is of the seven. Okay. Sister Debbie.
Yeah, just, cause I was thinking forms of government, monarchy, democracy, fascism, you know, that sort of thing. Communism. As a matter of fact, just a quick thought is that Putin is trying to bring back the Soviet Union right now by attacking, you know, Ukraine and stuff. He's doing several things, but one of the things he's trying to do is bring back the glory of the Soviet Union, the communist government. So just a thought. But I thought different forms of government meant like the monarchies, the fascists, the communism, the democracies, the, you know, that sort of thing. Over.
All right. Thank you, Sister Debbie. Okay. Ruth.
Just that we have to limit it to the powers that had power over the Roman Empire, not just forms of government, that it had to be in regard to the Roman Empire. That's what we're talking about. Over.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Yes. And that's the element where this woman resides. When the woman is, when the religious element of papacy is controlling the civil powers most directly, she's involved with being that head. When she is not involved directly with the government that is controlling the empire, she's supported by the waters. The people. So like during Napoleon time, she was supported more by the people. Or during Victor Emmanuel's time, she was supported more by the people. During the Nazis, she was supported more by the people. But she was always there, and she had a certain presence, like she has a presence now. Kings and presidents and queens go and visit the Pope for a reason. So there's a presence, but it's not, but the papacy is not controlling the government. That's still a future event, we believe. Sister Debbie.
Just one more question. You named 5, 6, and 7, but who are the first four?
Kings? I'm not answering that question. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
When we get to the point of 17, we'll delve into that and why. I'm only here to try to help demonstrate that there are two views to understand our beast that went into a bottomless pit back in chapter 11. So I'm only going to spend so much time here to try to ferret this out. Did anyone else want to say what their view was on the previous three or all seven? I'm happy to listen. Okay. So we'll just wait. Verse 12, 17:12. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom. Now the word as yet in the King James are spurious, but it's okay. Doesn't matter too much. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. So I'm just holding there for a second. So now that we're told in verse 12 that these 10 horns, which you saw, are 10 kings. Well, that's funny because the 7 heads, we were told, are also 7 kings. So what's the difference? Well, the difference goes back to the point that the 7 heads were mountains, and the mountain is a government. And yes, the governments are also depicted in a sense by kings. That's true. But there's only 7 of these who are the governments. But these 10 horns, these horns are kings. They are lesser powers. They are, sometimes you can divide Europe into 10 countries. Not always. It's ever changing. But the thought is 7 has a certain sense of completeness, and 10 has another sense of completeness. So, like the 10 toes on the image, for example, showing 10 divisions of the Gentile powers. But, okay. So here, what we see, though, is that the 10 horns, which you saw, are 10 kings that have no power as kings as yet. So in other words, they're like, it's like saying you've got 10 countries in existence, but they're not existent acting in a powerful kingly way. They are there, but they're disunified. But it's telling us that the time is going to come when they do become unified and they get power as kings for 1 hour, a short period of time. And they give that power to the beast. Now, the one way of thinking says that that beast is this repeat church-state government with papacy involved. And we think at this time Protestants will be involved too. And they, as a church-state union, will go to persecute, make war against the Lamb. Well, of course, it's Jesus. And how can they make war? How can any civil government and religious government make war against the Lamb? Well, they attack his feet members on the earth, his representatives, his body members. You all remember the oft-used example of when Jesus appeared to Saul. And Jesus said, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" And he said, "Who art thou, Lord?" "I'm Jesus." Well, Saul was persecuting Jesus' body members on the earth. So that's our example here. How do they make war against the Lamb? By attacking the feet members. And how do they do that? They impose the marking of the beast and of the image in chapter 13. If you won't get the mark, then you're going to be killed, is what it says. So we read that the victors who don't receive the mark, they got the victory over the beast and over his image. Those are the ones who stand on the glassy sea and can sing the song of Moses and the Lamb. That's the final feet members victorious in resisting the power of this church-state government enforced with the kings of earth that persecute the final feet members. So in my mind, to keep this beast, the papacy or the church-state government, a repeat of church-state government with papacy's involvement, with the woman, the harlot, in riding on this beast and having greater control, is all the same as all our other pictures of the final experiences of the church being persecuted by a religious government, being persecuted by church and state. Our picture of John the Baptist being persecuted by Herod and Herodias and Salome. So you all remember that. And Brother Russell was consistent with that in the fourth volume forward. And So let me just say that. I'm just going to say that there. And then we look down at verse 17, 15. And he said unto me, the waters which you saw, that's back in verse 1, Brother Chris referred to this, where the whore sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So it has this wide aspect. It's just not like saying that the nation of Israel, you'd have all the same. But no, it's all these Gentiles under the Roman Empire influence. Verse 16, and the 10 horns which you saw upon the beast. Now, the King James says upon, but I believe that the Greek is being brought out as and the 10. So let me reread it. And the 10 horns which thou sawest and the beast, these shall hate the whore and shall make her desolate and naked, shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And the woman which you saw is that great city which reigned over the kings of the earth. So, in verse 16, it's telling us that the people of the empire, the leaders, these 10 kings, the leaders of the countries of the empire, and sometimes Brother Russell calls them political leaders, financial leaders, economic leaders, military leaders, they all hate the harlot. They hate the religious aspect of papacy. And I'm going to suggest that the beast is the people of the Roman Empire, which supported the woman. They hate her too when they see what she's done. These are the burned, bundled tares. When they hear the message of truth, they've cast off that woman. They cast off the papacy and Protestantism and her daughters, her harlot daughters. So that she is the papacy particularly, but all nominal churchianity is hated and destroyed by the rising earthquake that turns into a fire of anarchy that destroys the city Babylon. So I need to make one more connection link here. I see our time is going. We're going to come back to this. In the 18th chapter of Revelation, Revelation 18, we're so familiar. We were just told that this woman, this harlot, who's hated, is the great city that the kings were involved with. And in 18th chapter, it tells us that's the city Babylon. And the kings and the nations have been involved with her. But I want you to look down to verse 7. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death, mourning, famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire. For strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. Here's the point. The woman, the harlot, says, I'm a queen. What does that mean? She's united to the kings. She says, I am no widow. What does that mean? It means she has husbands. And she says that she shall see no sorrow. She's feeling all empowered. That is a church state that's the definition of a church state cooperation. The queen, the king, and she says, I'm not a widow. So to my mind, when papacy is destroyed, when that woman is destroyed, she's in a powerful relationship thinking, what could go wrong? When actually the Lord says, this is going to be the very time you're thrown down. So this repeat, the eighth head, is a of the seven, it's a repeat of a previous form of government, the church-state government, in which the woman, the harlot, had been in control, and it was beastly in that she was a church and state government, and she, the papacy, had gone out of existence under Napoleon and was going to reappear in the future as the eighth head. And when it does, she's going to feel empowered to persecute the true church. But in the end, that's the very thing that's going to lead to her utter destruction, never to appear again, devoured by fire. If you have it as a Republican form of government, you somehow have to, and brethren do, I don't say this mockingly, it's not like that at all. They have a Republican form of government persecuting the true church in some manner. I haven't determined how that happens. But they do see this woman as being destroyed. But some feel that this destruction has taken place from 1914, with the end of the monarchies, with the end of Gentile time. So they would see her as a queen back then and not any longer. So they put this in the past. Whereas others of us still see this as a future event because we still see the papacy all about us here. So we're going to have to close there with that. We will come back to it. It's good to you know, think about it so long, read on it, and delve into it. And we're going to come back, of course, to all this and probably try to move forward in Revelation, the 11th chapter, a little more particularly with this little bit of background. I will say, if you look up beast in all the different places where Brother Russell uses it, you do, like I say, you can come up with the beast representing the people of the empire. You could come up with a form of government. You could come up with it being the papacy and so on and so forth. So it's a good study. I particularly use the fourth volume forward, the long one, as my, the best way that I could think of in interpreting it. But, we'll leave it there at that. Okay. Thanks for your